Welcome to the Grappling Discourse Podcast. Guys, I love when I'm a little bit ahead of the curve and I talk about something before the rest of the community really starts talking about it. And a couple of weeks ago, I did an episode talking about ADCC and just all of the professional organizations in grappling. And I was telling you guys that I could see a world in the very near future where ADCC is not the premier organization anymore. And lo and behold, today, Craig Jones released a video. And he took some shots at ADCC. Now, Craig has been going at Flow Grappling. And today, he, again, took some shots at ADCC. Which, no other athlete that I can remember has ever done that. ADCC has always been held in like really high esteem. And pretty much everybody's kissing their butt to try and be in the tournament, try and make sure they get their invite, and they don't want to ruffle any feathers. But Craig's kind of the first guy that is critiquing or criticizing ADCC. Now, here's the thing. Craig is in position to say whatever he wants. It's really Gordon and Craig. Those two guys are head and shoulders above every other grappler when it comes to popularity. These guys have huge followings. They have tons of fans. They are the Conor McGregors and Israel Adesanyas and the Sean Stricklands for grappling. So obviously a much less fan base, but at the same time, they do have devoted fans and they move the ticker. If they're competing, there's going to be more eyes on your event. What they say, people listen to, right? Like people are going to listen to Gordon and Craig's critiques or just thoughts on grappling. Now, I told you guys that I could not believe ADCC only pays $10,000 to the winner. I, for the longest time, thought it was $40,000 for the division winners and $50,000 for the absolute and super fight champion. But I was wrong. And I don't know how I got those figures. I swear I remember hearing that, and I just believed that forever. When I was coming up, I dreamed about winning a division, and like, man, when I win 40K, I'm going to do this with that money. I'm going to buy a house with the ADCC gold, you know, as a blue, young blue and purple belt. That's what I was thinking. You know how disappointed I would have been if I'd have made it to ADCC and won and only received a check for $10,000 that I was going to have to pay taxes on? So essentially just like a $6,000 or $7,000 check. I can't believe it. And Craig pointed out, he's like, look, ADCC has been around now for 25-ish years. It has come a long way. This sport has exploded, especially the last ADCC was a huge success. It is a shame that ADCC has not increased the prize pool. Like, it's the same prize from when they first started all those years ago to today. And ADCC is supposedly backed by the Saudi, like a Saudi prince or the Saudi family or I'm not exactly sure who, but here's what I know. If it's the same Saudis that are essentially taking over the sports world, like these guys are spending insane amounts of money to bring the sporting world, all the major sports to Saudi Arabia. They started with golf. They split the PGA in half. I mean, the PGA Tour, and golf is a very popular world. I know golf gets very good numbers. I'm a fan of golf. Like, I like watching, like, the Masters, and, I can remember watching Tiger Woods play when I was, 14 years old, watching it with my dad, But anyways, the PGA Tour was essentially split in half. Like, half the best golfers in the world started competing for LIV, the LIV promotion. And it created a huge controversy, and there's still a bunch of controversy. They're trying to figure out how this is going to work because for the longest time, the PGA was the only player in town. But the LIV Tour, I mean, they're paying so much more. They're giving these guys guaranteed contracts. And then the prize pools for some of these tournaments are just outrageous. I mean, I want to say a guy like Phil Mickelson is making like $100 million a year just to compete there and be a spokesperson for them. It's crazy. Boxing, Tyson Fury versus Ngannou. Tyson Fury going against Anthony Joshua. What they've done for some of the MMA stars. Dana White was talking recently about Khabib, and he was like, after he beat Conor, the Russian government gave him $20 million. Putin called him, gave him $20 million. And then he went to Saudi Arabia and met with these princes. And he said, you know, who knows how much money those guys gave him. They were giving him cars. They were just giving him everything. They were just lavishing gifts on him. And they're doing the same thing for a lot of, like, Islam. I'm sure Islam just gets treated like a god there. Chimaev, same thing. And so these guys are spending, I mean, billions of dollars a year on sports now. And if they started with grab, they've started this grappling promotion. I mean, it's ADCC, the Abu Dhabi Combat Club. You would think that it'd be time for like somebody to go, hey guys, like, can we just get a little bit more money over here? Look at our last show. Look at ADCC 2022. Look what we did. Look how far it has come from when we had this show in China and nobody came. It was completely empty. It was essentially a shit show where the stream was terrible. Nobody came. A lot of boring matches. To 2022, which was just absolutely incredible. And then this upcoming ADCC 2024, Moe's said that like they've already sold 10,000 plus tickets and they're going to sell out. It's like a 20,000 person stadium and they're going to sell this thing out. So it's just time, like, come on, look, can we increase the prize pool? Can we start paying these guys? You know, can we get to the $40,000 for every division? And I wouldn't mind if it was just they paid the top three guys and it was like $40,000 to the division winner, $20,000 to second place, and $10,000 to third. Or, okay, hey, you don't want to do that. Well, $20,000, we're just going to double the champion's purse and then pay all the rest of the guys. We're going to at least pay them $1,000 to show up and compete. But Craig was bringing up some really good points, especially for a guy like himself. He's like, look, I get paid. He's like, I get paid more money to talk about dick pills. Like my sponsor, I think it's Evertitan, but they pay me more than the $10,000 a month. He's like, I sell 4 to 5 times more in DVD sales or instructional sales. So he says he's making 40, 50K a month on instructionals. He can go do 1 or 2 seminars. There's another 10 plus K. Merchandise, all this stuff. Like he doesn't like, he kind of feels like it's a slap in the face at this point for him to show up and compete. And I totally understand that. And so if him and Gordon Ryan don't compete, and then let's just say a couple more of the big athletes, maybe the Rutolos don't show up. They're like, hey, we're making way more money doing one championship. Cade Rutolo has said that he is looking to become the double champ. He's looking to he's already one's grappling champion, and he's looking to become their MMA champ. So maybe he pulls out. Maybe his brother does too, because they're making great money competing for one championship. Maybe Mika Gava, who knows, you know what I'm saying? But I can see a world, especially if we have the second biggest star in the sport criticizing the organization. I can see a world where ADCC in 5 years is like, it's like no gi worlds. So the IBJJF has their gi tournaments, and then they also have their no gi tournaments, right? And so you'll hear a lot of schools. And if you train at 10th Planet Academy, you're probably not aware of this, but there's a gi season and no gi season. So for the first part of the year, the big IBJJF competition schools, they focus on the gi. And then the latter part of the year, they switch to no gi. So the gi championships are in the summer, no gi championships in December. Well, for the longest time, no gi worlds has really not been that big a deal to win. Like when I say that, I mean, yes, it's still a big deal. But nobody really sees it as like the world championship. It's not like Gi Worlds. Like Gi Worlds is very prestigious. It's a huge, huge deal if you win. The brackets are usually like insane. It's the best of the best guys competing. But no Gi Worlds was always like, man, like, yeah, there's always like one or two like top guys in it. But if you look at the brackets, I mean, there's a lot of the biggest names are missing year in and year out. Especially since they started drug testing. And so, yeah, like Nogi Worlds doesn't hold a candle to ADCC. Like if you just look at the brackets, like an ADCC bracket compared to a Nogi World bracket. Now, I will say Nogi Worlds has become more and more popular over the past couple of years. But at the same time, nobody's like, oh man, if I could just win Nogi Worlds. Like every single person would rather probably just even qualify for ADC, just be an ADCC rather than podium at Nogi Worlds. I would just assume that most of the athletes would probably take like, hey, you can either podium at Nogi Worlds or you can be an ADCC, one or the other. I guarantee most of the guys would choose to be an ADCC. It's just a way bigger deal. But how long is that going to last? Especially if we're getting more and more promotions shelling out bigger and bigger prize pots. The PGF continues to do what they're doing. IEGA is crushing the game. I think Zapatero was talking about doing like a $100,000 purse too in an upcoming tournament. There's just a bunch of promotions right now that are trying to change the game and trying to take the sport to the next level. Karate Combat. I mean, Craig, I would love to know the details of his deal with Karate Combat because he's acting like, look, I'm going to just compete for Karate Combat. It's like they treated me absolutely amazing, like 10 times better than Flo has ever treated me or any other athlete. And, you know, it just sounds like he got paid well. It sounds like he got treated like a king, and he sounded like he was just super, super happy. I'm really interested, and I loved Karate Combat. I watched probably half the show. I don't know if you guys know who this guy is. This is a little sidetrack real quick. There's a YouTuber who was really big into crypto, and he was like, I'm the biggest crypto guy on YouTube. His name was BitBoy, and he would give his predictions, and he would tell you what coins to buy. The dude was a nut. I remember watching him early, like a few, 3-4 years ago, and he would definitely get you excited. He'd be like, man, like in the next 3 months, AMP is going to 10x. And a lot of people, especially after they'd, you know, after you'd gotten to like follow this guy, his name was Ben. After you followed his show, you'd be like, okay, this guy's just a hype man. He's probably kind of scummy. I definitely got that vibe from the dude, and I hadn't watched him for years. But lo and behold, at this last Karate Combat, he had a karate fight against another crypto YouTuber. It was crazy, and it was actually a super entertaining fight. Now, skill-wise, it wasn't that good, but I was blown away. I was like, wait, that's BitBoy Crypto? The dude's like 46, 47 years old. And it was a crazy fight. I mean, it was back and forth, and these dudes were slinging. So anyways, Karate Combat was dope though. And the Pit is just a phenomenal addition to grappling. You can't, it's like way harder to run away, super hard to stall. Craig's flying triangle was absolutely insane. I would love to get like a still picture of that because like how high he jumped, it looked so sick. And so I'm interested to see, like, and Craig was talking like, hey, like, we're going to do ground karate. Like, we're taking ground karate to Karate Combat. And it's just an amazing pitch. I could see it being really successful. So, yeah, I would be very interested, though, to hear how much Craig made for that, how much Karate Combat pays. And going forward, like, Zhao Miao, I think it was Zhao. It was one of the Meow brothers, though. He had a match on Karate Combat, and he had recently, and I talked about it in that episode, he had talked about how an organization offered him $1,000 to compete and how he felt like that was a slap in the face. But he just competed at Karate Combat, so I'm wondering how much they paid him. We'll see. Who knows? Maybe Karate Combat starts putting out $50,000, $100,000 purses, and they become the new premier grappling promotion. Who knows? I definitely didn't see that coming. I didn't talk about them at all, but I mean, you got Craig Jones, you got the second most popular guy trying to grow the promotion and trying to co-promote with you. Like, you could be very, very successful. Now, the other thing I want to talk about today is, guys, I want to give you guys a little look into my mind, especially when I make a coaching mistake or I'm trying to learn something or I'm doing a deep dive on a position. So Monday night, teaching, ending my grappling class with mount positional sparring. And guys were struggling. A couple of the guys were really having a tough time holding the mount position for longer than 20 seconds. And we did about 10 minutes of mount sparring. Again, like I said, near the end of class. Well, the last 2 minutes, I tried to like help Travis. Travis was having trouble with the mount. And I just gave him terrible cues. And the cues I gave him, he actually ended up doing worse than what he was already doing. So he was already getting escaped pretty fast against one of our brown belts who's really good. He's like 220, real technical too. He's a very, very tough grappler. And he actually escaped in like way less time. And so I was like, dude, clearly my cues were terrible. I need to understand the mount position better. It's not one of my best positions. I don't really have, obviously, like clearly defined ways to control the mount or just good cues to give the athletes in that position. And so I got to do a deep dive. Nothing's more embarrassing, in my opinion, like when you're coaching or teaching and you give bad cues or you give bad instruction. It's always a humbling moment, and it makes you like really realize like how much you don't understand and how much there is more to learn. And so I, over the past 2 days, have spent about 4 or 5 hours just researching the mount. And I have been in the game a very long time. And so I've learned how I like to study. I know the resources that I like to turn to. I have the instructors that I go to. I know who the best modern mount players are. I also have my own jiu-jitsu experience to really, you know, like I understand a lot about jiu-jitsu just from all the years that I've spent doing it. And so what I'm saying is it's just way easier for me to do a deep dive and really, really learn a lot about a position or really answer a question that I might not have the best answer to compared to 10, 12 years ago when I was like a blue belt. I guess yeah, like 11, 12 years ago when I was a blue belt, right? And so I really found the best. Like I love, you know, everybody talks about, especially right now, everyone's talking about like Greg Saunders, the guy from Essential Jiu-Jitsu or no Standard Jiu-Jitsu, Greg Saunders and, you know, the ecological approach, all that crap. I don't mind Greg. Like I've definitely like watched a couple of his videos. I've think he has some really interesting stuff out there, but I, you know, he's not my cup of tea per se. John Donahue here. Everybody loves John. Obviously, Hoffa and Guy Mendez. You guys know I'm huge, huge fans. Like those are kind of the special of like the mainstream instructors. Those guys I think are the best. But people talk about jiu-jitsu or Brandon or you know whoever you know. And I have one guy that I don't really hear a lot of people ever talking about that I think is an absolute genius. I learned so much from, like, there's been a handful of times I've went to this guy's just YouTube, and he has just enlightened me so much, and his teaching is so concise, and I just cannot say enough good things about Jonathan Thomas. Jonathan Thomas is a genius. He is a grappling genius, and he is one of the 10 best instructors alive today. I am positive of this. Well, anyways, I watched his mount dominance video. He released one a couple of months ago where he was talking about just key details to controlling the mount. And it was exactly what I needed to watch. And at our school, Brandon is by far the best mount player. Brandon's mount is world class. It is levels better than my mount. My mount does not compare to Brandon's. So I had some ideas like in my head. Like there's things I've heard Brandon say. There's details I've experimented and stuff. But again, it's not like my A game. And so it wasn't there, especially when you're trying to give these cues. Like it just wasn't something that I was comfortable doing, obviously. And I definitely couldn't do it on the spot. And Jonathan's like watching his videos because Brandon's out of town. He's in LA and he's somewhere. I referenced Jonathan Thomas and it definitely reminded, there was a couple details. I was like, oh yeah, like duh. Like I've heard Brandon say this a million times. But again, I really love Jonathan's teaching. It is always just so easy to follow and he can just make instant progress for that next session. And Jonathan was talking about, look, like let's start in the low mount. So we're going to take the low mount position, which means our head is going to be below our partners. This is super important, especially when we're trying to defend the two most popular escapes. The elbow, the knee elbow escape, which is my favorite escape, and is honestly an escape that I think every single white and blue belt should like just practice over and over again. That's a technique I think everyone should master. And then the kipping escape. Now, the kipping escape is very, very popular now, especially amongst no-gi practitioners. I remember watching Gary Tonin and Gordon Ryan back when they were on the come up, and these dudes would just lay there and let their partners or let their opponents pass their guard, and they would let them get to them out position, and they would immediately kip out right into the Ashi Gurami position, and then they would heel hook them. And it was just revolutionary. There was no other grapplers that were doing stuff like that. And I remember Gordon especially, like there was multiple times. I remember one super fight. He beat this. He was a brown belt, and he beat this other brown belt. And this dude, I think he was from Texas, but he was, you know, he had some accolades. He might have been like a Pan Am champion, but Gordon literally acted like it was the easiest thing in the world. He literally laid there, like played like that possum style where he just laid flat on his back. Dude passed, mounted him. 30 seconds. I'm talking about this match lasted 30 seconds. Gordon lays down, lets the dude pass, lets the dude mount. Immediately does the kipping escape, heel hooks the dude, and it was just like, you got to be kidding me. It's that easy to beat a brown belt Pan Am champion? And it was just really one of those performances that made people like, I remember just being like, no, Gordon, this guy is special. This guy is going to be a champion. But anyways, a lot of no-gi guys really like that kipping escape because it goes right into leg locks. And obviously a lot of no-gi people spend a lot of time on leg locks. And it's just one of those entries that a lot of white, blue, especially like blue and purple belts put a lot of time into. And it's a big part of their game. And that was probably the main escape Monday that our guys were having trouble with. And I got to say that that's an escape that definitely works really well against my mount. I've had difficulties in the past stopping the kipping escape. And I've watched Brandon so many times just effortlessly destroy the kipping escape. But I struggle with it. You know, and it's just, again, it's not the mount is just never a position I was like really practicing. Anyways, so we're in the low mount position. Head is lower than our partners. Jonathan was saying, we're going to use our chest to stop the knee elbow escape. So if you think about the knee elbow escape, your partner, your opponent has to get to their side, which means their shoulder, one of the shoulders has to come off the mat. All we're going to do is we're going to use our chest to apply weight to keep that shoulder pinned to the ground. And if your head is above your partner's, you're just not in the proper position to really put weight through your partner's shoulder. And he also gave a really good cue, and this is a cue that I've heard Brandon give a million times. Well, Jonathan was talking about how, you know, he wanted you to try and act like you were trying to squeeze a pencil between your shoulder blades, or you were trying to get your shoulder blades to touch. But Brandon always just talks about the Superman chest. He's like, no, just use the Superman chest. Either way, they're both great cues, and we started off class with just like going over these details. So, hey, we're going to want your partner to try a knee elbow. If they do that, we're going to use our chest to flatten the shoulder out. Make sure your head positioning, like your head's below your partner's, and see what happens, right? And across the board, it works, right? It's just phenomenal. And that's what I love, again, about Jonathan Thomas's teachings. It's like I can go to, there's been so many times I've went to his YouTube channel, like just researching a position, and he's done a 10-15 minute video on it, and I just immediately take those details and have success with it, or give it to somebody else and they have success with it. Well, the kipping escape, so the chest for the knee elbow, and the kipping escape, you're going to actually use your shoulder. You're going to use your shoulder to make the, or apply pressure to the chin. And so you don't want, and he was saying, like, I don't want you to think about this as like you're using shoulder like as a cross face. You're actually using your shoulder to open the chin up, because a good kipping escape, the chin goes to the chest. Like you're trying to get into a rounded position to elevate. So the hands are in the hips. Chin goes to chest. You're going to use a good hip bridge. And you're going to have the frames through the hand. And then you're going to try and bring your knees to your chest. But essentially you're trying to just get into the butterfly position, right? Like if you just think about a good butterfly guard and you're trying to elevate somebody, you're what? You're very, very rounded, right? Chins to chest, back's rounded. Knees and your legs, like your butterfly hooks aren't super extended, right? Like you're trying to keep good, like 90 degrees, knees to chest. You bring your knees to your chest to elevate what you're trying to do for the kipping escape. And so all you're going to do is you're just going to open up the chin, right? You're going to use your shoulder, get underneath it, and just open the chin. Make sure the chin can't get down to the chest. Took that detail. And the sparring, first the technique, I'm just like watching guys kind of go through it. It looked really good. And then the sparring was so much better. Guys were having so much more success. And this always brings me back to number one, how much there is to know and learn. And especially if you're trying to truly master this, like this art and this sport. It's just infinite knowledge, and you constantly are going to be humbled by what you do not know. Somebody's going to ask you a question, or you're going to have to, on the spur of the spot, come up with an answer, and you're going to give poor instruction. You're going to, at times, give the wrong instructions. It happens to the best of guys, and it made me wonder, like, I was wondering a lot last night just about John Donahue. Like, how often does, like, John Donahue give poor instruction? I'd be really interested to just like talk to John, like, okay, like how often are you just wrong? Or do you just like tell a guy like Giancarlo's going through a turtle breakdown and you just, and his opponent does something and he asks you and you just like make the wrong decision. You just tell him the wrong thing, or you just, you know, you think something in your head and you think it makes sense and then you tell him, but like, you watch him and it just doesn't work. And then you have to go to the drawing board. And, you know, John's notorious for watching like 1978, like Olympic footage, you know, or like the NCAA championships from the 1990s. But like, he's going to go deep into his studying habits, you know. And like I told you guys, I have my instructors that I like to go to, whether it's YouTube channels or, you know, hey, like this guy's like a really good, like I watched a lot of Gordon's rolling footage and competition footage because he has some of the best, or he is the best modern mount player. But yeah, I'm just like, I wonder what John, like when the last time he did something like that, and then the process he went to rectify, like how did he rectify his not knowing and giving poor instruction? But it's going to happen to you guys, right? And it is uncomfortable. Like, you'll be like, dude, I can't, like, I feel kind of embarrassed. Like, I just told this guy literally the wrong thing to do. But it is a really big learning moment. And I'm always blown away by how important just questions are. So whether it's your students asking them or you're asking yourself questions about your game and being honest with yourself when you have poor answers to those questions, and then having really defined paths to going on deep dives or doing deep dives on topics until you have good answers and you have really good solutions to those problems. Till next time, guys, I love and appreciate all of you. I hope you have a great rest of your week. Peace.